Radio Free Press, a podcast from the Campaign for Press and Broadcasting Freedom, campaigning for free, independent and accountable media.
The need for the greatest possible diversity in the British news media has been a founding principle of the Campaign for Press and Broadcasting Freedom. But after decades of campaigning, it's taken the worst scandal journalists can remember to propel media ownership and the ethics to the top of the news agenda, and finally perhaps force the politicians to take action. The unfolding disgrace surrounding illegal phone hacking and other criminal practices in gathering information has opened up the possibility of real change in the media landscape and in the ethical behaviour of press proprietors, editors and journalists. Barry White is the much-respected organiser of the CPBF. Have the shocking disclosures about illegal hacking of messages on mobile phones, has that really opened up the possibility, do you think, Barry White, of an unprecedented opportunity?
Yes, it has. This is the chance of a generation to get the arguments that we've been making over the past 30 years about the need for a diverse media, an accountable media to serve the democratic interests of our society, right on top of the agenda. Such a momentum has been built up over the past few weeks. Our job now is to maintain much of that momentum into the inquiry to ensure it doesn't drop off and get buried in other news. So that's our task for the future.
Now, as well as Barry White, with me to discuss this are two experienced media commentators, Ivor Gaber and Joy Johnson. Let's begin by getting an open statement from them both. Joy Johnson, you've been a producer with the ITV, with BBC. You've been a media director for the Labour Party and for Ken Livingstone. And now you're a visiting university lecturer in journalism. What do you think would be the ideal outcome of Lord Leveson's inquiry?
I think this opportunity is an opportunity, but only if we seize it. We saw what happened with the financial collapse, where we thought that people would, on the left and so on, would be able to seize that moment, and it let it slip and things went back to normal. This is the time when we can't let that happen over the media. The ownership of the media is the most important thing, in my view. People said content is king. That was always folly, because when you think only about content, then you get instances like now with trying to hack into phones. Only the story matters. So it was a symptom of too much control in the hands of one media empire.
Ivor Gaber, university professor in journalism at the City and Bedford Universities. You too have had wide experience with ITV and the BBC. Do you have a vision for what might come out of Lord Leveson's inquiry?
I think we're in unprecedented times, and because of that, it's quite difficult to have a vision. I can have an aspiration. The notion of having a more diverse media ownership is something one aspires to. I would also like to see the end of the Press Complaints Commission, not exactly an original statement, but replaced. We're playing with words, but they're important words. Whether it's independent or statutory, we'll come back to. But I have to say, I'm a general enthusiast for the regulation that we've achieved of broadcasting here. And I suppose one of my aspirations is to see the equivalent of Ofcom BBC Trust, for all their imperfections, working for newspapers. Overseen, obviously, at the end of the day, that there's a government standing behind it, but I would be very fearful of having what the press owners call statutory control, but I would like independent regulation. So that's my direction of travel.
Now, Barry White, can we get down to some nuts and bolts about this inquiry that is going to be headed by Lord Justice Leveson? Are the terms of reference, for example, fit for the task? They have been widened to include broadcasting and online journalism. Do you think they're satisfactory?
Well, I think they're satisfactory, but what you've got to do is, by submitting as much wide-ranging evidence as possible, always challenging those terms of reference to push them out, because we all know the history, and people have said it here, that eventually it dies down and people forget and the thing is buried. What we've got to do is ensure that these terms of reference are constantly being challenged and widened. They've also got to be done in that way because the revelations we're going to get over the next 12 months, which is the period during which this part of the inquiry, which we're talking about, is going to be holding court, there's going to be constant revelations and changes in the criminal charges, all of which will have a profound implication. So the terms of reference are okay, but we've got to make sure that we press hard on the key issues which people around this table have already identified.
So, Joy Johnson, what do you think is going to be the priority for campaigning groups like the CPBF in the weeks ahead as this inquiry begins to take its evidence?
Well, first of all, they've got to do as Barry said and make sure that the terms of references, if they're seen not to be adequate, are widened. There is one area, for example, on trade union reform. The trade unions were de-recognised at the Murdoch Empire. Now, the NUJ has a code of conduct. If the NUJ hadn't been de-recognised, journalists would have been able to say, I'm not going to do that, that goes against my code of conduct. It would have given them the confidence to be able to say it. But we know that Murdoch wanted to smash the unions as he wanted to actually smash the left. And I think trade union reform is one area that we, even if it doesn't go into the broad remit, is one area that we've got to keep going on about. And I worry that the broadening out to include things like the BBC is a complete smokescreen. It was done as a sop to Cameron's right-wingers, and we can't allow any kind of level playing field. There isn't a level playing field.
Right. Now, Ivor Gaber, academics like yourself obviously want to keep an overview over the inquiry because there'll be many representations, won't there? There'll be from the media companies. We've just heard from Joy Johnson about how the conservative right want to use this as a way of attacking the BBC. What do you think that activists like the CPBF and other groups can actually do in these coming weeks?
Well, I've always been impressed by how seriously inquiries take evidence. That doesn't necessarily result in any action. But for a start, it's very important that individuals give evidence. They do actually measure the weight. I won't say they discount it from organisations, but if they get 100, 200 submissions, for example, one of the things that slowed down dramatically the giving approval to the B-Sky B bid was the number of individual objections that the Department for Culture, Media and Sport received. So although organisations are absolutely vital, what I would say is they must not, or they must try and avoid having a sort of form letter that they send in. Encourage individuals, as many individuals as possible, both to give written evidence and to ask to give oral evidence, because I think, okay, there's going to be big players and smaller players, but numbers count here.
Now, let's go around the table with the first killer question. Barry White, should the Murdoch's massive control and holding in British newspapers and television, pay television, should it be allowed to continue?
No, it shouldn't. And the events of the past few months, or years even, testify to that. It was out of control, it was above the law, it had a hold over politicians, it had a hold over its own journalists, it had a hold over the police. And that's what happens when you let media power get out of control. We now have, as I said, a once-in-a-generation opportunity not only to challenge that power on the back of a wave of public opinion, but to do something about it, to cut it down to size.
Have you an idea of what the size of the Murdoch, should they be limited to, for example, to having just newspapers and not pay television as well?
Well, there have been in the past attempts in various broadcasting acts to limit the amount of control a newspaper owner has in a broadcasting outlet. With the whole question of greater platforms, wider platforms that media companies own, we're going to have to revisit this. So there's no formula in the top of my head except to say that we must revisit the arguments we made in the 1990s about limiting that cross-media ownership and get it right to avoid the mistakes that we've seen in the past few weeks.
Ivor Gaber, let me come to you next. You've just heard Barry White on behalf of the CPBF. He's quite clear about this. What's your position on the future of the Murdochs?
One of the things that people don't notice and should be noticed is not only does News International control mass circulation papers and TV, all of the news on commercial radio comes from Sky News, and that is a huge audience. They're music stations mainly, but they have big news audiences, and people neglect that. I think that's very important. That brings me on to the other point. Of course, Murdoch is, as most media organisations, migrating online, and we have to look at that. Regulating the internet is a very problematic area, But there is the issue of, do we also, when we're considering this broad ownership of diversity of media, do we include online ownership? Because that is a very difficult issue, because I think many of us think the ability of anybody to blog, to publish online is a positive, is a plus. And so we have to tread carefully. So this is a very difficult area.
Are you clear, Joy Johnson, about the Murdochs, whether their empire here should be cut down to size?
It should be cut down to size. And the great thing about this particular moment is that now the politicians recognise that it has to be cut down to size. Even Cameron is saying it was too big. When you had Rupert Murdoch say to the Select Committee that News of the World was only 1% of their empire, and therefore he'd lost touch with it, I mean, he actually made the case. You know, if only 1% of the empire, then my God, what about the other 99%? And so I think the good thing out of this already is that A, the B-Sky bid was total control was dropped, but also I think the idea that you could have a Fox-style news here is gone. It's certainly gone for the short term and probably even the long term.
And when we come then, Joy Johnson, to think of the future framework that we might see for media ownership in this country, Lord Leveson, of course, has set himself a target of a year to be able to come up with an answer or a recommendation for this. What sort of framework would you envisage?
My God, that is a huge question and one that I'm not equipped to answer. But I do think something like the Guardian Trust, for example, should be allowed to survive. I think the point that Ivor was making about online and media has got to be included. But what one thing that the control has got to be limited, and there's got to be more flowers allowed to bloom.
Could I put that to you, Barry White? What sort of framework does a group like the CPBF have a vision of what the framework should look like?
Well, the question of plurality and diversity is crucial, but and therefore we have to break down the number of monopolies that exist. Now, the important thing about this is that the government is already framing a new Communications Act, and what goes into the inquiry about media ownership, cross-media ownership, press regulation, must be reflected in the communications bill that they are talking about. We know this is a deregulatory government. Last month, they deregulated the cross-media ownership rules for local and regional media. And that sneaked through without anyone noticing. So we know what their political intentions are. What we've got to do now is ensure that through the campaigns that have come about over the B-Sky B proposed takeover, that we do completely reverse the media landscape and make sure the Communications Bill takes on board all these issues that we're talking about so that they can be put into law once and for all.
Now, of course, another major issue is the ethical behaviour of journalists. And we've already heard from Ivor Gaber that he's absolutely convinced that the Press Complaints Commission hasn't worked and must be replaced. What, though, of the future? Do you think there should be fines for journalists who are caught misbehaving? Should there be a new right of reply for aggrieved people? How far and what sort of vision do you have for a new regulatory framework?
Well, let me pick up on your word, the future, because I think the future is not orange necessarily, but it's brighter, because I do think, and this is special pleading I accept, there's a generation now of young people going into journalism who have done journalism degrees, media degrees, whether undergraduate or postgraduate. I think they have a greater consciousness of ethical issues. I think it is unlikely that some of the people who've done this sort of work and considered the issues will necessarily go down the path we've seen some of the red top journalists go. So that's a hope, that's an aspiration, but it's based on some ad hoc experience. Now, how far do we go? Well, I think the Press Complaints Commission actually has done some good work on individual grievances, and one wouldn't want to lose that, but certainly under another body. I think you raised two very important issues, and I'll just try and deal with them very briefly. I think a very obvious one is equal prominence. I think that is a clearly...
You mean equal prominence for a right of reply?
Yes, if a newspaper has written a story and the Press Complaints Commission, its new body, finds it is clearly wrong, whatever, then they must give equal prominence, same page, same amount of space to the apology. I think that is self-evidently obvious, because that is what broadcasters have to do. At the start of a panorama, if a previous panorama was wrong, they broadcast the apology. I think that is self-evidently right. The issue of fines is more problematic, but not totally. I mean, clearly the vision that the newspaper editors put up is, oh my goodness me, if you have statutory control and a paper is fined and they refuse to pay the fine, what happens then? Does the editor go to jail? Well, no broadcasting editor has gone to jail. They have been fined. ITV only a few years ago had a massive fine for trying to fool the public, according to the Ofcom. They paid their fine. People don't go to jail if they don't pay fines. There are other ways of seizing assets and so on and so forth. So I think that is just put up as an Aunt Sally to distract attention. Fines, maybe. Jail, no.
Okay. Now, Joy Johnson, where do you stand on this new possibility of a regulatory framework? You, of course, have been on the other side. You've been active as a journalist and would want to defend the right of journalists.
I do defend the right of journalists, but I defend the right of ethical journalists. Certainly, individual journalists should never be fined. I mean, it comes from the corporate, it comes from the top. If anyone's going to be fined, it has to be the bosses. So let's not talk about bosses being journalists being fined. Let's talk about bosses being fined. I definitely do not want to see journalists going to jail. Unless they have committed something absolutely heinous, which is maybe what's going to happen here. I guess I want an independent regulation rather than... with the Advertising Standards Committee is often used as being something that we might be able to follow. Neil Kinnock on the Today programme the other day said that he would like to see balance in newspapers. Frankly, I'm not interested in that. I mean, I think he put himself up and fortunately he was shot down. We certainly can't have the system that we have at the moment. We know that will change. An independent body, I think, would be good, and the bosses have got to be held to account.
Right, now let's turn to Barry White. The Campaign for Press and Broadcasting Freedom has had a very clear position in its belief that the Press Complaints Commission has failed. Of course, we know also historically that the National Union of Journalists was not in the PCC, and that in many people's view has been a failing, that there hasn't been the National Union of Journalists in there to try to strengthen self-regulation. Does the CPBF have a clear view on the future when it comes to the regulation of media ethics and journalists?
Yes. First of all, we've argued for many years that the Press Complaints Commission is actually has not worked. Having said that, the majority of the complaints to the Commission have been about accuracy. And this is where the right of reply is crucial. An important element in any new body has got to be a statutory right of reply. That's the first thing. The second thing is, we want independent regulation, independent of politicians and independent of media owners. And that's an important thing to bear in mind. The third point is this, that we put up four private members' bills since the mid-1980s to achieve either a statutory right of reply or a wider reform of the whole process of dealing with complaints. And that was in 1992 with the Freedom and Responsibility of the Press Bill, known as the Soley Bill. And that only failed by a few votes. But you see, the clue is in the title, the freedom and the responsibility of the press. And those are key words here. We want to see a new body that represents a wide range of public opinion, that is respected by journalists, respected by members of the public, who think that they're going to get proper redress. And that does mean, at the end of the day, there should be a statutory backup if editors refuse to comply with either their own codes or whatever code the Commission comes up with. So there's got to be some sort of backup, like, as Joy said, with the Advertising Standards Authority. And that's what we've now got to start arguing for. We're not talking about the freedom of the press for the editors. We're talking about freedom of the press for journalists and the public's right to know.
Now, finally, let's have a word of caution. Britain is proud of its free press. Our tabloid newspapers are famous for their vitality. As a country, are we in danger, perhaps, of snuffing out a vital component in that vibrant world of British journalism? Let's go round the table. Joy Johnson.
We absolutely must not snuff out free press. I was talking to my sister only yesterday, and she's not at all political in the same way as I am. And she said, whatever we do, we mustn't lose the freedom of the press. She said, but I'm not interested in wine gigs. I want to know about what the powerful are doing, what the people who affect my life is doing. So I don't think it'll happen, actually. I think freedom of the press is a tenet, an important principle of our democracy, and it must remain. And I think it will, actually.
Ivor Gaber, can I put the same to you? Do you have any worries about the spirit of tabloid journalism, about the strength of British investigative journalism?
Well, on the spirit of British investigative journalism, I think we should just pay credit to The Guardian. Without their tireless digging year after year, we wouldn't be sitting here discussing this today. So on the one hand, you can say this has been a terrible crisis for British press. On the other hand, it's been a tribute to some of the best of investigative journalism. I always say I do a lot of working abroad with foreign journalists who are always asking this question about, oh, the tabloids. And I say, and it's a cliche, we have the best press in the world and we have the worst press in the world. And is this the question that we discuss, and I don't know the answer, is the Sun, for example, the price we pay for The Guardian, so to speak? Do we have to have the Ryan Giggs exposés, the price we pay for the MP's expenses stories? Because I think most of us would agree there is some damn good investigative journalism still taking place. So the answer to your question is, I don't know, I hope not, because I think there's some very, very good investigative journalism still taking place in the British press, as well, of course, as British broadcasting.
Well, let's put that question finally to Barry White of the CPBF. Is there a danger, do you think, that we're going to snuff out something that has added to the democratic strength of Britain, the free press?
Well, what's been snuffing out the democratic freedom of the press in the past few years has been this constant closure of local and regional media. You know, people's voices aren't being heard locally and regionally because of newspaper closures and journalists losing their jobs. So we've got to remember that there's another side to this as well, about what's going on in our press and how we're losing many of our newspapers. I agree with what others have said, that it's been the investigative journalism of Nick Davis and other investigative journalists that have brought this story to the fore. Their tenacity, they're sticking to it against the tide of political and other opinions. But they've come out and they've shown us what's going on. And that's the sort of journalism that we value, and that's the sort of journalism we need. And as I said earlier, press freedom isn't about the freedom of the owners necessarily to determine what we have to read. It's the freedom of journalists to report and in the public interest, and that's what we're fighting for.
Well, I'd like to thank Barry White. Thank you, Barry. Joe Johnson and Ivor Gaber. This podcast was produced by Claire Colley for the Campaign for Press and Broadcasting Freedom.